One of those Sundays where it's kind of cold and the Christmas tree is coming down, and
it's not that cold.
I know,
but the sun's kind of out and it's warmer than it's been over a week.
I'm feeling a chill, though. Maybe I need a shawl thrown around my shoulders, a hot water bottle in my lap. I don't know. It's just I hate the post holidays.
Why?
Because the holidays are so great.
Well, yes.
And then the post-holidays are just like this, oh yeah,
but think about
that's
all
over.
Think about all the great things that are happening right now. Our friend Anthony is visiting from England. He's sitting in the living room listening to us podcast right now.
Yes, there is that.
Gary Cotty can't talk.
Poor Gary Cotty.
Think about how great that is.
he's going to make up for lost time once he gets his voice back.
He had his tonsils out on Wednesday. Everything is happening at the same time.
Yes. We have
a friend in from out of the country, another friend, neighbor, who had his tonsils out Friday and who has been recovering here.
Yes.
In our home, on our couch.
Yes.
Sleeping upright on our couch.
Right.
We make sure that he gets his medicines and painkillers.
And drinks water.
And drinks his broth and
we're
stuff
his
like that.
Angels of mercy.
And then the laugh good dinner.
Yeah.
Was last night.
LA Film Critics had their dinner last night.
And then the Batman serial showed up.
Yeah. It's just one thing on top of another.
Everything's going on at the same time.
If you haven't been to
our... I'm very tired now.
If you haven't been to our Facebook page yet to see our video of the arrival of the Batman v. Superman Dawn of Justice serials...
It's stupid.
I recommend
it. The video is stupid. The actual item is stupid.
I like a good tie-in. I mean, you know, it's a little weird to go to the grocery store and have, like, minions are on everything on Earth, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's something about a serial tie-in that I've always just found kind of...
Well, that's you being a child again.
I guess.
We
do own a box of Urkelos, after all. Just the box, not the cereal
right.
they're in.
No, we do. Yeah, it's, I know. We have vintage cereal boxes.
Yeah.
They're great, old objects, they're great old design objects.
Yeah. I like the cereal box as a medium of merchandising. I don't care about like having it printed on my paper towels or, you know, Happy Meal toys, but cereal boxes, I don't know. There's something about cereal boxes that I find kind of charming.
All right, that's fine. I understand that. I like old design as well. Here's what I don't want. I don't want to be used by a corporation to sell a product for them. You want me to sell your product? Pay me.
They're paying us in cereal.
I'm not against being in advertising, but make it worth my time. Here's how...
They sent us a cereal and a Superman cape. I don't know what else you could possibly want.
Oh, look, you know what I want?
It's kettle time.
I want my tea. Hang on.
One moment, please. All right, Dowager, are we ready to carry on now that you have your tea?
I got it.
Speaking of people who are willing to pay us to promote their products, Linoleum Knife is brought to you by the independent film guide, The Real Truth. Find out what Lee Daniels, Kim Pierce, and Werner Herzog have to say about making your first low-budget movie. Available now on iTunes. And in paperback from Amazon.
I like it so much when you do that.
I'm a little rusty. Anyway, so yeah.
The thing about that cereal is that, first of all, the cereal itself looks gross.
I don't know that chocolate strawberry would be high on my list of flavor hybrids I would have come up with. But then I'm not a food scientist, so what do I know?
You're a food eater. It goes in your food mouth.
In my food hole.
And I just—I don't want here's what they want you to do. They want you to open it up. They want you to take pictures of it or video. They want you to hashtag so that you can connect to other people who want to pay attention to this thing.
Gotcha.
You're participating in the selling of a product.
Sure.
Now, we took a video.
We did.
And we put it on our thing.
Yes, on But we didn't hashtag.
For me, that video, correct. We did not hashtag. It was just for the people who were listeners to this show. For me, I just wanted people to see the extent that studios will try to use media people to gladly, happily participate in this marketing.
The thing is, the cereal is itself an actual product. I mean, one time when I was at The Advocate, we got sent a box of ice cream that was to promote the Ice Age movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like the ice cream itself was the product. The ice cream was the enticement to get you to write about Ice Age.
I understand.
This, at least, there's a level of directness in that they want you to sell the cereal, which in turn sells the movie.
Right. I'm not, again, I'm not against marketing tie-ins and, you know, look, when Tangerine came out, they sent us a whole box of donuts.
Yeah, we liked that a lot.
And it might even just be the scale. You know, I'm happy to talk about the donuts and Tangerine.
Sure.
Because I want people to see that film. That movie needed
the boost.
People like you and me to push it.
Right. It's now streaming on Netflix, by the way, folks, if you've not seen it.
And it's a very worthwhile film. It's
yes.
One of my favorite films from last year.
Yeah.
Batman versus Superman does not need me.
Well, and I have to say, I got an email from somebody at the podcast email address asking if we would be interested in seeing the cereals from the new for Batman and Superman. I'm like,
seeing them or eating them?
I don't remember what the verb is.
Getting them?
Probably getting them.
Okay.
And you were like, yes. Yes. And so I thought, okay, fine. It'll just be a box with a couple of boxes of cereal in it and, you know, with a letter and we'll talk about it. I had no idea it was going to be this elaborate diorama. You know, with a fold-out flap and a big fancy box and a Superman cape and a Batman mask and a bowl and a spoon.
I think if they are asking in advance if you want to participate, your answer should be no.
But it was cereal.
I get it. I know. And we like cereal and we like eating and it's fun and whatever.
I have no regrets.
I don't either because we stopped short of the connectivity that they wanted us to participate in.
No, I understand. We did it our way.
All of that to say this. We did not open those boxes of cereal.
Nope.
We folded that cape back up and we put it back in the box. The bowl, the spoon, the Batman mask, the giant elaborate case that it came in, that is sitting here on the floor right now. We're not selling it because that is unethical. We are not doing anything with it other than giving it away to you. One person.
One lucky listener.
One person.
In the Southern California area.
No. No. I'm not even going to say in the Southern California area. Here's why. You live in San Diego, you live in Long Beach, who knows when you're coming up here, and I want this thing out of our house. So, here are the rules.
The first Angelino, then.
The first person...
in the Southland.
The first person in this area.
Mm.
Look, if you live in San Diego and you're going to be here tomorrow, sure. The first person to email us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And I mean the first person. The first local person. Because here's how it's going to happen.
You're going to physically take this off our hands.
You are coming to us, and you are going to pick this thing up, and you're going to take it away. You will then enjoy it in any way you see fit. You know what you can do with it after you take it? You can hashtag about it if you feel like it. They provide you with hashtags that they would like you to use.
Yes.
We're not doing this. So, dear first person to email us who is local, it's yours.
Absolutely.
If you do not hear back from us, that means you were not the first person.
Correct.
So, if you email us this like today and you don't get a response, that's because
somebody outfoxed
you. 1 to 13 people beat you to it. I know that we have at least a dozen or so people in Los Angeles who listen to this show.
At least, yes.
Of those people, if you want it,
it's yours.
It's yours. First one to email us. First one who has a way to come get the thing.
Yes.
It is about 2 feet by 2 feet. It is large.
Yeah.
It's not even lightweight.
Yeah.
You're going to come over, you're going to get it. You're going to pick it up, you're going to take it away.
Take it out of our lives.
Yep. And then you could be marketing for Warner Brothers all you like.
Hashtag all the live long day if you feel like it. That's between you and your social media network.
Yeah.
So the Lafka dinner, it went by quickly, which is not always the case.
That is a hashtag blessing.
It zipped by at a nice clip. I thought there were some very nice speeches and I have to say it's one of the few times ever that you will hear artists actually say nice things about critics. They will say that the work that film critics does, you know, like
the work that film critics does,
the work of film critics that it
keep going, Tucky.
That it impacts, you know, their work, that it, you know, kind of, I don't know if it keeps them honest, but at least they appreciate that someone is out there paying attention to what they do. People said very nice stuff. Charlotte Rampling had a taped acceptance.
She was my favorite.
That was a great one.
Because her video said, she said in that very soft way that she speaks, mm-hmm. Thank you for singling me out. Thank you for singling out my work. Thank you for choosing me. I am the chosen one.
It was very sweet. And then Andrew Haig got up and also spoke. And,
it was fantastic. Know. She is the chosen one.
That's right.
If I were Charlotte Rampling, I'd walk around all day saying, where's my piece of cake? I am the chosen one.
She's gorgeous.
Where is my steak? I'm the chosen one.
Given how well she's held up, I suspect that she turns down a lot of red meat and sugar. Just a thought.
You don't know that.
I'm just guessing. I don't know.
Maybe.
Ryan Coogler had a very sweet
speech. That dude is so funny.
About going to...
that dude made me laugh many times.
About going to the Cannes Film Festival as a student.
And meeting Justin Chang.
And, well, just watching Justin Chang. Like
that crazy Asian typing dude.
Yeah. Apparently, he spent a lot of time hanging out in the Variety press tent, and he said there was this guy who would come running in, and he would type, and then he'd go run out and see another movie, and then he'd come back and type.
It's the first time I'd ever seen a film critic work. You know, Justin Chang was super happy listening.
Oh, he was very, he posted about it on Facebook this morning. He was very flattered. But that's what it's like at film festivals. I mean, you know, I remember like when I'm in...
That's why I don't go.
When I'm in Venice, it's like I go see a movie and I go back and type, you know.
I'm not a fast typer.
Anything.
Or anything, really. Yeah, that's why I don't want to go to a film festival and be on a deadline for a film festival. Because that just seems like a headache.
You would enjoy going to a film festival and being on a jury. Because you'd have stuff you'd have to see, but there wouldn't be like, you wouldn't have to then turn around and write anything about
smash out a piece of writing in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Because that's what's happening. That's what happens. You go, you got to crank out that review before you even have time to think. Before you even have the time to sit down and have another cup of tea.
It's not that bad. Because, for example, when I'm in Venice, I'm seeing a movie and I'm getting out and, you know, it's the middle of the night in Los Angeles.
Right.
So, you know, if I get out of a morning screening at 11 a.m., it's, what, 2 a.m. here?
Right.
So I have a little bit of time to cogitate a bit and, you know.
Right. You know, it made me realize something, though. You know who's never been a guest on this podcast?
Justin Chang.
Justin.
We need to have him in.
Yeah.
He'd be fun.
Yeah, he'd be great.
Although he's a bigger sucker for puns than I am, so just beware. When we were sending out emails about Spike Lee's Chirac.
I'm not tolerating either of you.
He immediately said, I had no idea that he was doing a biopic about the French minister. Yeah, see. Just get ready for that. I'm just warning you up front.
What if neither of you were the guest? What if it were just me?
Then, yeah, who's going to plug all this stuff in?
I'll hire a technician.
No, you won't.
Yeah,
That's not.
I would just not do it.
Yeah, you wouldn't. You would just sit on your rump and drink more tea.
Speaking of not doing it, in the middle of the show last night, I get up, took my little fifth inning stretch. Mm-hmm.
And you picked the dumb time to go
because
you missed the
there is no dumb time.
You missed the Ann Coates tribute reel, which was pretty great.
I understand she was great and everything. Remind everyone who she is.
Ann Coates, the Oscar-winning editor of Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes.
Who basically sort of brought new wave style, like direct cutting, into mainstream Hollywood filmmaking.
Yes.
Her repertoire includes The Elephant Man and Murder on the Orient Express and Aaron Brockovich and Out of Sight and The Golden Compass and 50 Shades of Grey and Young Cassidy and just a really amazing. She's 90 and still working and a really influential film editor.
I missed the tribute clip.
Yes.
But it was my time. Halfway-ish through.
Right.
I stand up. I go out to the lobby, stand around, talk to the security guys. Every year they think I'm one of them. This is fantastic.
You're a wall in a suit.
They're always like, who are you working with? I'm like, I'm a film critic. And they always go, oh.
Good for you for making it to the other side.
You too have no neck. We just assumed you were one of us.
Well, who were the most famous people in the room last night?
Not very many.
I mean, Alicia Vikander.
Yeah.
Aaron Sorkin.
Michael B. Jordan, who does not have a bodyguard.
Michael B. Jordan, who's not have a bodyguard.
That's it.
Yeah, because Fassbender wasn't there. Yeah. Charlotte Rampling wasn't there. Michael Shannon was there.
Yep.
You know, Andrew Haig was there and Christine Vachon. But yeah, like, right. No, there were not a lot of like boldface names this year.
No.
Chris Weitz,
I go out there and I'm just hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And out comes Amy.
Mm-hmm. Amy Nicholson,
yeah.
Who, by the way, if you haven't been reading Amy and the other three critics doing Slate Movie Club this year, it's a very funny conversation. Go check that out. It's like Amy and Mark Harris and Dana Stevens and I forget who else. Dave Kerr, I think.
And I say to her, how come you're not presenting anything? Why aren't you up there being cool? Instead of, you know.
Others.
Others who talk a long time.
People were very good about that this year, I thought.
Generally,
that's
yes.
why they went into that fast clip. People weren't yakety-yakking.
And she goes... She goes, no. She goes, I like sitting at the table and drinking whiskey and having a good time. And then she says to me, why aren't you a member? And I was like, no. I got my man in there. He's a member.
Yeah, see, that's why I make you go to the dinner.
Everything I need from this organization, I get through you. I get you, the screeners.
You ride my coattail. So the one thing you have to do in return is go to that dinner with me, even though you bellyache about it every single year.
So we understood each other.
There you go.
Our own, our mutual
and I
laziness.
I made it a point not to present this year because I know you prefer to sit at a table that doesn't have like famous people and their publicists at it.
Right.
And there were a couple of movies that I might have liked to have, right. But I thought no, I won't.
See, and that's the thing. I'm actually stupid because the times that you have presented have been. You have been delightful on stage.
Well, thanks.
With Almodovar and, you know, whoever else. And having to sit at the table with Almodovar was painless because he doesn't speak English very well. And I got a good story out of it. Trying to get the butter from Edie Falco. Which never happened.
It was a very big table. She did not
they're
know
all,
you wanted.
They're all very big tables. Yes. They're the same big tables every year.
I know.
Last night I got two butters.
Yes.
Because Robert Abele was sitting next to me and mm-hmm. he reached for it.
His butter game was on point.
For me.
Edie Falco,
on the other hand,
was probably thinking, well, I'm not having any butter.
No one else
Certainly
should.
Certainly no one else is going to
no
want
No one
this.
Else should have it either.
No, I don't even think she was doing it in a punishing way.
It's Here's just, the worst thing. I'm sure she's lovely.
Probably. And I bet if you were sitting next to her.
I bet she doesn't even think about the butter in front of her. I bet she doesn't even see the butter.
No, probably not. But I bet if she had been one, two people away from you.
That's the tragedy of being Edie Falco.
I know. You think the rich and famous lead these glamorous lives, but they are lives without butter.
They're trained not to see the butter.
If she'd been one or two people away from you and you'd said, pardon me, Edie Falco, could you pass me that butter? Yo. She would have done so with grace and aplomb.
Edie Falco, give me that damn butter. Got my roll here. It's getting coughing. Cold. It's getting cold. We saw some movies.
Yeah, and it's not a big week for movies. It's the again
terrible
like
said, ones.
It's the post holiday doldrums. Well, no,
terrible movies.
I saw one great.
You
movie.
You saw Chimes at Midnight.
Chimes at Midnight, the Orson Welles classic.
Talk about it.
So yes, this is a movie that he made in the '60s, in the mid '60s, and it's basically he took all of the Falstaff parts from four different Shakespeare historical plays and kind of melded them together in one story to make Falstaff the protagonist. And I've always heard about this movie, and I've always heard that it's great. But it, for some reason, for a long time, there have been these weird rights issues, and so you couldn't see it, or you could only see it on these really crappy like VHS transfers or whatever. And I'd been sort of holding out to really see it properly. And now Janus Films has done a 4K restoration. It just screened in New York and Los Angeles. I imagine it will make its way around the country and eventually be a Criterion Blu-ray, which will be exciting. It's gorgeous. It's amazing. It there are shots in it, just individual shots that rank among the best things that Welles ever did.
Yes.
Which means they rank among best shots in cinema.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a really extraordinary battle sequence, but there's also a lot of very funny kind of interplay between the characters. John Gielgud plays Henry the Fourth. And you know, Jean Moreau is in it and Margaret Rutherford and this mixed bag of people. It's extraordinary. And what's funny is that, you know, most of my exposure to Falstaff has been through my own Private Idaho, where they're basically doing Henry the Fourth, part two. And, you know, Keanu Reeves is the Prince Hal character. And William Reichert is playing essentially Falstaff, and down to specific situations and dialogue. Like
mine
the whole...
has just been through opera, so don't feel weird.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So anyway, so just interesting to see, you know, and I'm sure Gus Van Sant watched Chimes at Midnight a lot before making his own version of it. So no doubt there's a direct line of influence there. And admittedly, I am not so well versed on my Shakespeare that when I see his stuff, I always know what people are talking about. I find a lot of times that I'm sort of reliant upon the actor's ability to convey the meaning behind the dialogue because I don't know what the dialogue is about. I'm not sitting there with an annotation that sort of explains what it means.
Right.
But Wells is really great at that. And, you know, he's acting the crap out of it. And I was able to follow what was happening and to get the spirit of how these characters were interacting and what was going on. Yeah, it is. It's a bona fide classic. I think even Wells said that if he had to show one movie of his, you know, to qualify to get into heaven, this would be the one he'd pick. And weirdly enough, it also has it has a certain flavor of those kind of mid-60s European productions, which this was. Like, he shot it in Spain, and I think there was a lot of Spanish money in it, right, where there are characters who are very clearly dubbed after the fact, you know.
Right.
And certain, you know, there are certain times where kind of the low budget kind of peaks out around the corner. But it's also, you know, the way that shots are framed and the depth of focus and just different touches of it are very Wellesian. You know, they very much call to mind like Citizen Kane or Touch of Evil or something. Be on the lookout. If Chimes at Midnight is coming to your city, if it's, you know, going to play at a museum or whatever, it's still popping up in LA this week at CineFamily. They've added on a few extra shows. So if you missed it last week, I highly, highly, highly recommend that you go see it. And I was happy to get my, you know, it is technically a new release for 2016. This reissue opened on January 1st, so I figured that'd be a good way to kick off my year because the January movies, for the most part, tend to be what the British call a dog's breakfast. Subsequently, I then had to go see The Forest.
Hang on. Something very important happened to me.
Oh, okay.
In the cinema.
Go on.
I saw The Masked Saint.
Yes. Better you than me.
The Masked Saint is a Christian wrestling movie.
Woo! Wrestle Messiah Mania.
Husband, pastor, hero. The Masked Saint.
Is that really the tagline?
Yes.
Oh, brother.
All right, so allow me to set the stage.
Oh, do.
Many of you have thrilled to our descriptions of the Burbank Town Center Mall. And the many ways that we love it. I learned some things about being at the Burbank Town Center Mall.
Such as?
On a Friday afternoon.
Oh.
Teen mall culture is happening there.
Oh.
After school.
Interesting.
Yeah. I showed up for the 2:30 show.
Mm-hmm.
Place is a ghost town. If you're new listening to this show, what you need to understand about the Burbank Town Center Mall is that they have approximately 7 stores that you would know the name of.
It is a sad, sad place.
They have
a Sears.
I don't think of it as a sad, sad place. They have about 7 different stores with recognizable nationwide chain affiliations.
Right. The rest of them all look like the fake stores in Mallrats.
Which means that they are mom-and-pop stores. And I like that. I like that kind of mall.
Mm.
I like a janky, low-budget, independent store, bad design mall.
Magnifique Mademoiselle still.
There's a certain amount of
taking orders for Golden
Globes.
There's
a certain amount of sadness to the Burbank Town Center Mall, mostly because it used to be a mall that lots of people came to.
Yes.
There was a carousel
mm-hmm.
in the middle of this 3-level mall.
Yeah.
There ain't no carousel anymore.
No.
And there aren't a whole lot of customers anymore.
No. They still have a fairly thriving food court, I would say.
But that is where the kids are. After the movie was over, I used my one of my Dairy Queen gift cards.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
Mr. Kellogg.
Mr. Kellogg. Got myself a little... They're selling little sandwiches there now.
Mm.
So, you know, free food.
And a dilly bar?
No. And I went to the food court, sat down for 5 minutes and ate it before coming home.
Mm-hmm.
And that place is going off.
Hmm.
Every kid and all their dumb kid backpacks, they're all hanging out there after school.
No.
Jammed around a table. Like nine kids jammed around a little table.
Right.
Because they can't stand the idea of
being apart.
Being apart from one another. Yeah.
Were these like kids in uniforms or no?
No, no, no. Just public school kids from Burbank. Now, before that happened, I saw The Masked Saint. The AMC Town Center 8 is on the third level.
Mm-hmm.
And The Masked Saint is in Theater 8.
Oof.
Now, here's what that means.
If
you walk into the Town Center 8, the first four theaters are right there off the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
They're the big houses. They are the movies that people are actually paying money to go see. Star Wars is in one of those theaters.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. How exciting for them.
But then there's a hall. It is a long, 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 and I mean it is a long, narrow hall.
There's a minotaur in there somewhere.
And then you turn right down another long hall.
This is where I saw Atlas Shrugged Part 3.
And then you turn left down a third long hall. And that's where theaters
5, 6,
7, and 8 are. And number 8 is at the very, very end.
It's like that last gate at the airport.
The seats are really big in 5, 6, 7, and 8. They're very large seats, and they're very old. And they're fabric covered in, like, the kind of fabric you see theater seats covered in now is some sort of weird space-age future fabric that resists...
It's a polymer.
Yeah. ...stains and whatnot.
This is the old-school
fuzzy. That old-timey fabric from the 80s. That's just fabric.
And it's worn through to kind of shine.
Yeah, and it's got tears and unusual spots. But, you know, they're keeping it together.
Mm-hmm.
So it was me and three other people.
Okay.
These three other people came as a group. I'm 51 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They all could have been my parents.
Hmm.
They looked at me funny when I walked in. I was like, calm down, Christians.
Were you wearing like your Bathory shirt or something?
Venom.
Oh, well.
But I had it on under a hoodie, so it's not like they could have seen it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You look like a young agitator.
Yes. Yeah. I look like the guy who works in the hardware store. I don't look like anything. Here's what The Masked Saint is about. It's based on a book about a real guy who was a pro wrestler in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
Who became a preacher. This is not unheard of. The world of pro wrestling and the world of evangelical Christianity are not far removed from one another.
It was a lateral move.
They are both highly theatrical professions.
Right.
Being a preacher and being a pro wrestler.
With very basic concepts of good and evil.
They both involve excursions into the grandiose.
Mm.
So it's not like that's a far-fetched idea.
Sure.
I'm a pro wrestler. Now I'm going to be a preacher. It's like when a rapper becomes an actor. You think, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, you've been talking all this time.
You're declaiming.
Yeah. So, then they made a movie about it that I don't think it has much to do with this guy's actual life. Because if it did, we would have heard about him by now.
Oh, gotcha.
The Masked Saint opens with a young man being abandoned by his father, mm-hmm. bullied at school, going home and watching pro wrestling on TV, learning some basic fake wrestling moves,
right.
which he then employs on the school bully to really actually take down the bully, mm. as though he were learning actual wrestling. Like, it's not like the wrestling coach at the school said, young man, I've got something for you to do. Right. You know, I'm going to teach you how to wrestle in a way that will, it'll disempower your opponent.
Pro wrestling moves involving the other guy helping you do them. There's some assistance involved.
So naturally, he grows up to become a wrestler in the professional world of the WFW. Not a thing.
Now, unless, of course, he's hitting the bully with, like, a folding chair. That would be different.
No, that would have been awesome. The wrestling scenes are shot, like, in this, like, pro wrestling. We're meant to understand that this is pro wrestling. They're shot in smallish rooms with, like, four rows of chairs. For audience,
oh, brother.
And a lot of darkness, so that you can't see how small the room is, that there aren't enough extras. These matches are shot like Kubrick shooting Barry Lyndon. Like, there's like candles off to the. We don't want anyone to know that there's a pro wrestling match going on.
Marisa Berenson swans yeah. in with a candelabra.
The, it's just like, you know, a light bulb somewhere. Real rinky-dink sort of, you know, costumes. Mm. We're to understand that the Masked Saint, who his costume is a white mask.
Right.
No shirt. Mm-hmm. He's got this rockin' bod, the actor who I've never heard of or seen before, and he co-wrote the movie. He has clearly put the time in at the gymnasium.
Sure.
And he has the word. First, he got these boots with crosses on them.
Uh-huh.
And white tights.
Uh-huh.
And the word saint written on his little bubble butt. Like yeah. Juicy Couture.
Saint.
With a big cross on his butt.
Hmm. Okay. Well, if you're not going to wear a shirt, that does kind of limit your real estate for, you know, yes. verbiage.
And he has to fight a guy.
Is he masked like a Mexican? Like a luchador? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. His last match ever before he goes off to become a preacher.
Uh-huh.
Is against an opponent known as the Reaper, who is essentially Nathan Explosion come to life. 7 feet tall, giant wall of muscle.
Explain who Nathan
is. Long Explosion. Black hair and black metal corpse face paint.
Gotcha. Tell people who Nathan Explosion is.
Metalocalypse. Okay. The best show on television that is not on television anymore. Or is in an extra long hiatus. I don't know.
Beats me.
So this Reaper, gentleman,
yeah,
apparently does not understand the actual rules of fake pro wrestling, because even before the match starts, Roddy Piper, who plays the sort of skeevy promoter
mm-hmm. in his final screen role,
he even says, you know, like, you're going to win because I say you're going to win, and you're going to lose because I say you're going to lose, and I'm the guy, you know, like,
I'm the decider.
I'm McMahon, and you're yeah. you do what I say, and this is all a show. Theater. It's a show. But no, Nathan Explosion breaks the guy's leg. Good. So the Masked Saint finishes his final wrestling match. His leg being snapped in half. Like, I don't think that's not what's supposed to happen in real fake wrestling.
Yes.
He takes his wife and his child actor to live in a new place in Michigan. or he's going to be a preacher at a Southern Baptist church.
Right.
That is called Westside Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. Although the building itself actually has the words First Baptist Church on the side. Like, they used a real church.
And they didn't bother.
And they put up a new sign with a fake name, and they didn't bother to blur out the the words First Baptist Church written actually on the building. Yeah. There's very little... There's a Bruce LaBruce level of continuity going on in this film. One minute it's blizzarding. The next it's merely cold and dry outside. Then there's a blizzard again. Then it's clear again. Same day. Like, it doesn't matter.
Don't like the weather in Michigan. Wait 5 minutes.
It'll all melt. Just like that.
Where does Diane Carroll fit in all
this? I'm getting to her.
Okay.
You come to realize that the search committee for this Baptist church consists of Diane Carroll, who is a pro wrestling fan.
Ah.
And she has sort of always sort of like had her eye on him, apparently.
Mm. Well, those white pants.
Well, yeah. There's some major codpiece going on in these white tights. Just FYI. But Diane Carroll, as the lady from War Room, she's a terrible search committee, because it would appear that he has never been to seminary. We have no idea if he has, because apparently he did not participate in the Southern Baptist preacher search process, which I know very well. Here's what happened.
Was he even applying for the job?
Yes.
Okay.
When a Southern Baptist church needs a new preacher, the search committee rounds up a couple, two, three, and those guys
get grilled.
No. They come to your church and they preach.
Ah.
And you, the congregation, You are Simon Cowell and Paul Abdul.
It's ecclesiastical idol, right?
Yeah. That's essentially what happens.
Okay.
You don't vote, but your feelings get communicated to the people who are selecting.
To Diane Carroll.
If this guy came to their church and preached beforehand, you'd have never known it, because he comes in and he just starts saying, "Faith, we need faith. Faith is good. Isn't it great to have faith?"
Now wait, is the movie saying he's a bad preacher?
And the movie says he's a bad preacher.
Okay.
But this is not how Southern Baptist churches work.
Right, gotcha. He would have had to come in and do a dry run.
They would have had to vet him first, and they would have had to hear him preach first, but he's inept.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Ooh, is there a training montage?
Kinda. Happens later. But I'll tell you, it's not a training montage. It's something else.
Like in Singing in the Rain? Tay-tee-ta-to-too.
And so that's... Here's a Christian movie attempting to fake out a Christian audience about how
Christianity works.
How Christianity works. Well, here's the other weird thing while I'm on that subject. I don't think they ever say the name Jesus once in the movie.
Whoa.
They say God. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember them, and I was listening for it.
Yeah.
I don't remember them saying Jesus this or Jesus that.
And these people like to say Jesus.
It is mostly left to Diane Carroll to dispense the words of spiritual wisdom. Mm-hmm. But she speaks in a very sort of generic Davy and Goliath kind of spirituality.
Mm, right.
Without getting into specifics.
Yeah.
And Southern Baptists, if they like anything, it's specifics.
Yeah, they like to get very into the weeds.
Yeah. And that's strange. Hmm. It is as though
Do they think this is a crossover movie?
Either they thought this was a crossover movie, or they're charlatans who don't actually understand what it is they've written a movie about.
Hmm. Because so this is like Turkish Star Wars.
Like it, yeah, like like it. I don't know what the religious affiliation is of the people who created this film, but they are either holding back for the sake of a crossover audience,
mm-hmm.
or they don't believe a word of what they're saying.
They're pandering and badly.
Either way is a fascinating proposition. Because there was no way in hell that this is going to be a crossover hit. Because it's so cheap and low budget and so sort of just ineptly, you know, put together.
Did they think like pro wrestling fans were going to come see it?
Because Roddy Piper's in it? Because Roddy Piper's in it? I don't know. I think they may have been counting on the bizarre connections between conservative evangelical Christianity and hyper masculinity.
What's that thing?
Which is a thing. What's
that
these days?
What's that thing where the people like karate chop?
The power team.
The power team.
That was those guys in the '80s.
Yeah.
The Christian bodybuilders who would go around to do youth conferences
and break blocks for the
and
Lord.
Break blocks and essentially sell a version of Jesus that is
Charles Atlas,
rough and tough, and will kick your ass.
Yeah, none of this turn the other cheek, bourgeois.
Yeah, the idea of a savior that, in the words of the Bible, made himself nothing.
Right.
You know, that's not very interesting to a lot of guys.
Yeah.
In the world of conservative evangelical Christianity.
They want the fig tree killing Messiah.
they want the table turning.
Yeah.
They want the guy who ran in and overturned all the tables.
Yeah.
And so I heard so many sermons growing up about what a tough guy Jesus was. Tough guy. Obviously meant to sell their product to guys, to men.
Not this hippie Jesus.
Yeah.
That's why it was always hilarious when, was it George W. Bush who said during the debates that his favorite political philosopher was Jesus Christ?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you know what that means. G-dub.
Okay, so he has left preaching behind, left wrestling behind for preaching.
Right.
But he kept his uniform.
How could you not?
And just one night, he happens to have his mask with him. I don't remember now why he has the mask with him, but he's got his luchadora mask with him. And he sees a pimp beating up a prostitute in an alley. So he jumps out of his minivan.
Oh, brother.
And he puts on the mask. And suddenly, the cross and the switchblade has become Kick-Ass.
So that's now, a superhero movie.
Now he is a superhero in a wrestling mask beating up the pimp.
Oof. Again, with his fakey wrestling moves.
With his fakey wrestling
moves. The other person has to be participating in for them to work. Oh, man.
Not since the slow motion antics of the $6 million man. Yeah. That is I think that is the actual noises they use in this film. If memory serves.
Brother.
So he goes, he's got a renewed sense of purpose.
Oh, well.
He goes to church. And he says, you know what? This church has a lot of problems. It's a dying, decaying little church. They've got like 40 people in the congregation. No money.
Sister act.
It's a miserable mess. And he's like, you know what? We have the power to change this church. We have the power to fix the pipes and the ceiling and all this stuff. Who in here is a plumber? And one guy raises his hand. He goes, you can help with the plumbing. Who in here is a construction worker? One guy raises his hand. He goes, you can be help with the construction worker. Who in here is an accountant?
Can I?
Is an accountant. And one lady raises her hand. He's like, you can help us with our books. And then in walks the, my headphones just did a weird thing. Okay. And then in walks in walks the prostitute that he saved. And my first thought was, prostitute? Who is here is good at whoring? You could be our church prostitute.
Who has spent her life exploring the subtle whoring that costs too much to be free?
She walks in, and no sooner does she walk in, and the congregation all but Lord of the Flies her. Like, they're like, like, people get up and move away from her. I'm like, you've got a lot of nerve. You belong to the loseriest church in the world with a pro wrestler or a preacher.
You're going to judge her?
You're gonna shy away from the one lady in this place who's dressed fancy for the occasion
and has a steady income.
Yeah. So he decides that to get some money for the church, he's going to return to pro wrestling.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say bikini car wash.
He's gonna pro wrestle, earn money, and put it back into the church.
Okay.
And he does. Mm-hmm. And he returns to the ring as the saint, and he gets the money, and the church starts thriving. But that pimp is after him. Furthermore...
Well, and if he's still wearing the mask, the pimp knows where to find him now.
Furthermore, he has also now, in the process, saved a diner from an armed robbery.
Oh, well.
With his mask.
Okay.
He disengages these men from their guns. Two guys. He removes their guns. And he saves everybody who's being held hostage.
Wow.
And he runs off into the night. Oh. So now there's a detective after him because he's a vigilante. So the pimp is after him. The detective is after him. The prostitute knows who he is. Doesn't speak of it to anyone.
Well,
she starts bringing all her prostitute friends to church, and the prostitute customers, like these like Skid Row dudes,
the Johns.
Yeah, these people just start pouring into church, and everyone's like, but the church is thriving. Money's up. They're fixing things, and what do you know? The masked saint gets a swelled head about all this.
Oh, no.
He starts thinking that he's the one responsible for everything. That he's the one that's saving everybody. That he's the savior. He's the Messiah.
Not Jesus's dad.
Then there's another blizzard, and then there's not. Diane Carroll pops in every once in a while to be like, now. Wisdom. Words. The wife gets pregnant.
Is she the one black character in this movie?
No. The detective is black, and so is the pimp.
Oh. Yes. Okay. That's some base covering. Okay.
They cover all their token race bases.
Yeah.
Everyone else is white.
Right.
Everybody else in the movie.
Cop, pimp, fount of wisdom.
Yeah.
Okay. Done, and done.
Yeah. So, eventually, he has to give up wrestling to focus entirely on the church, fight the Reaper one more time in a non-fixed match that he organizes with Roddy Piper and says, fair fight between me and the Reaper. Never mind that the Reaper literally is like 2 feet of height on him and about 100 pounds of meat.
Right.
Masked Saint. He knows how to beat the brawler.
Uh-huh.
He's going to win. He actually gets the saint in the same break a leg kind of move.
You mean the Reaper?
He actually gets the Reaper in the break a leg kind of move and you know, shows mercy to him and merely pins him. And then
he gives him a hairline fracture.
And then gives him a hand up after he wins the match. Mm. The crowd goes wild. The congregation knows that he's the saint. Everyone's happy.
Oh, so the congregation didn't know all this.
They didn't know, but he tells them.
Gotcha.
There's a running line throughout
movie.
The Masked Marvel.
The wife keeps saying to him, God never gives you more than you can handle. Yeah. And I'm like, actually, that's false.
Yeah.
That is not a true thing. A, that ain't in the Bible. Secondly, you just made that up.
He gives plenty of people way more than they can handle.
Folks just made that up and decided that that was something that they read in the Bible somewhere. No.
Yeah. That's just masochism.
At the end. It is a terrible, terrible movie. And I wanted to watch, I wanted to talk to the people who were there with me in the theater and ask them, you know.
Why are you here?
What brought you here?
Did you get what you wanted out of this thing?
And you know you're watching a bad film, right? I mean, you're doing this to support the home team.
Right.
You're not here because you know you're going to see a good movie.
You're watching with your kindness filter on. Of like, right. Well, they tried.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's in focus.
And at the end, they show little photos of the actual guy.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, well, why didn't somebody just make a documentary about this guy?
Right.
Because that's an interesting enough topic.
Sure.
To make a documentary about. But no, superhero Christian wrestling movie is what everyone really needed.
Are there Matt Saint comic books or tracts?
I wish. There's some terrible singing on the soundtrack. I know.
Ooh,
that.
Brother.
Some like contemporary Christian folky people singing the same sort of "Oh God" kind of song.
Okay.
If you're God, you're like, could you not?
I appreciate the thought, Paul, really.
It's yeah.
And I saw The Forest.
I spent money. Spent money watching this.
I saw The Forest, which is super dumb.
Tell everyone all about it.
Wow, okay. Well,
I just spoiled all of The Masked Saint for everyone, like it matters.
I don't even know that I can spoil The Forest because the third act is so confusing. I'm still not even quite sure what all happened. But basically, Natalie Dormer from Hunger Games and from Hunger Games of Thrones, plays an American woman who has these flashes that her twin sister, who lives in Japan, is in danger. She's always had this sort of twin power of, like, you know, the way she describes it is like there's this constant sort of hum, you know, in her life, and that when it goes silent, she knows that something is wrong with her sister. And apparently when they were both in college, the sister, like, had OD'd at some point, and she realized it and, like, got her help in time and blah, blah, blah. So she goes to Japan. And the one cool sequence of the movie, the one, it's early on, you think, okay, maybe this isn't going to suck. Like, she's coming to Japan, she's, like, flying in, taking the taxi, and they're intercutting with the scenes that led to her deciding that she needed to go to Japan. So they're very kind of quickly getting all that sort of plot out of the way. And it's shot in this really cool way where, you know, she's kind of taxiing through the streets of Tokyo, and the camera's either very much below her or above her, and it's this kind of weirdly distancing, jet-laggy kind of feeling. That's the last interesting thing this movie has to offer. She goes to the school where the sister was teaching English, and the girls there freak out because they think that she is the ghost of their teacher because they assume that she's dead because she went on her own to this forest whose name I don't have in front of me and don't want to butcher the name of. But
we've never heard of twins. You must be a ghost.
It's this forest at the foot of Mount Fuji, where apparently it is infamous because people go there to commit suicide. And it's a real thing.
All right.
It is a genuine site of tragedy in Japan, and of course
of repeated tragedy.
People keep going there, of ongoing tragedy. So naturally we turn it into a crappy Western horror movie about white people. So she travels to the forest and nobody there will help her, and they're all like, no, stay on the path, you don't want to spend the night there, you'll see things and it's scary, and don't go, your sister's probably dead if she hasn't come back. She runs into Taylor Kinney, who's on Chicago Fire and is apparently Lady Gaga's fiance in real life.
Okay.
I'm now learning.
Great.
And he plays a travel writer. He plays a travel writer for an Australian magazine. It's never clear if he's supposed to be Australian or not, because he's certainly not making any effort to do an accent. So
okay. Maybe
he's an American writer for an Australian magazine. He's still a terrible actor. And he's going in with this like forest ranger, so he says that she can tag along, and they go in and they find the sister's tent, and the ranger's like, great, we'll come back tomorrow and blah blah blah. And she's like, no, I'm staying here. My sister's gonna come back to this tent, and I want to make sure she knows that I'm here and blah blah blah. So then Taylor Kinney volunteers to spend the night with her in the forest, and then they start seeing stuff, and she's not sure if she can trust him and blah blah blah. It's boring. It's so boring. I mean, it's not even the kind of horror movie where they just rely on a bunch of cheesy jump scares.
Is there a lion who is the king of the forest?
The forest. No, sadly. There are cheesy jump scares, but there aren't even that many of them. So it's like the food is so terrible here and such small portions.
Are there forest nymph ninjas like in Uwe Boll's In the Name of the King?
No, there is, however, a creepy ghost in a schoolgirl uniform.
Great.
Because it's not a Japanese horror movie unless there's a creepy like 11-year-old girl with really long hair.
Right.
Anyway.
You should have gone with me. To see The Masked Saint instead. I think I had a better time.
I think you did. Yeah, no, I just sort of sat there rolling my eyes a lot and thinking, like, is this going to get good again, like in that part where she lands in Tokyo, or is this going to be more of this bourgeois? And yeah, I mean, Natalie Dormer's fine, and she's, you know, she's good at sounding like an American, and she makes the two twins, you know, even though the sister isn't in it a lot, she's mostly like in flashbacks and stuff, she sort of gives them a flavor of being two distinct characters. But yeah, this is a big, big bore. It's a January horror movie. That's all you need to know.
When I learned it was coming out in January, and then I saw the trailer that looked dull, and then I learned that it was PG-13.
Yeah. And the fact that
I just thought,
the marketing of the movie is exploiting the fact that this is really a place where people go to kill themselves. It's just tacky.
That is kind of gross.
Yeah. Like, the trailer ends with you people Googling, you know, the forest is real or whatever.
It's right,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it is real. Maybe you shouldn't make a crappy horror movie about it, you know, when it's something that is probably a real source of pain to a lot of people. You know, at least make a decent horror movie about it.
If you're going to exploit people,
that's
and
the least
their grief,
you could do for their memory. You know? Should make one that doesn't suck.
Make a real good horror movie.
Ugh. All right, what's your DVD pick?
Speaking of Japan.
Yes, and forests.
Princess Mononoke.
Mm-hmm.
Blu-ray.
Yes.
New.
And it's a gorgeous movie. It
new on Blu-ray.
Deserves to be seen in all the depths.
Miyazaki.
Yes.
It's incredible.
It is.
That and Spirited Away. They're probably my two favorites.
Yeah, I'd say those are up there for me too, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I think, the first Miyazaki movie I saw. I think that's what kind of got me into him. I had seen Pompoko,
right,
which is Takahata, but my first Miyazaki was Princess Mononoke. It's a great movie. Mine is Murder on the Orient Express. I saw it in the Ann Coates tribute reel, and I was like, oh yeah, this movie, it's great. And it's really well edited. I thought watching the clips last night of the movies that we honored this year, like Mad Max Fury Road and Carol, made me want to see a lot of them again, Anomalisa. And then watching the Ann Coates thing, I was like, oh yeah, I haven't seen Lawrence of Arabia in ages. I haven't seen Out of Sight in a while. I've never seen The Elephant Man.
I find that weird.
I've never seen it.
I don't know how did you miss that?
I don't know. There's a couple. I've never seen that. I've never seen Lost Highway.
Because you and I were both young teens. When,
yeah, I don't know why I never. I don't know
out.
Why I didn't get around to that.
I one. Ran right out to see that.
Yeah. So you know, they'll turn up one day at the New Beverly or something, and you know, I'll see them projected, and I'll get caught up. Now since this is such a slow week for movies, we thought we would dig deep into letters, because we have quite a few.
How many minutes have we been going on?
We've got about an hour.
An hour?
Yeah.
All right.
But let's because here's the thing. We're going to do the best of the year this week, and...
Next week, you mean?
No, we were going to do best of the year this
week.
We
were going to do it this
week.
Yes. Correct.
Words I am saying... that you are not listening to.
I didn't hear the word.
But the guests that we want to have come in were not available this weekend. They are available next weekend. So we postponed to that. So this week, instead, we're going to read some letters.
This is from Mint. Hi, David Alonso. I know I'm too late to be writing this to get it on the subsequent podcast. I was too late in listening to your last podcast to get this to you on time, but I figured I would write in and try to explain why both of you are right about the characters in The Big Short.
Oh, okay.
Alonso is right in that the characters in the film are doing what they see as the right thing to do as people educated about the inner workings and machinations of the stock market. The stock market is built in such a way that shorting stocks and bonds, betting against them, is the natural safety mechanism against market bubbles. It's a financial incentive to try and keep bubbles from getting too big. Dave is right, though, in how that is a really screwed up system, turning the people trying to do the right thing into war profiteers. The morality of the stock market is fundamentally corrupt, and I am mostly with Dave on the just don't bet advice. Anyway, since I haven't totally settled on my top 10 films of 2015, I thought I would send you a list of my top 10 performances of 2015.
Okay.
To knife. Sincerely, Mint.
What do we got?
Michael Shannon in The Night Before.
Nice.
Which I fully agree with.
Yes. In fact, when...
He was my favorite thing in that movie.
When, I think I might have mentioned this, but after the LAFCA meeting, when we honored him for 99 Homes, there was a group of us that tried to lobby to have The Night Before added to that award, and we were not successful. But yeah, I agree.
Sylvester Stallone in Creed.
Okay. I think...
I'm with it.
I feel like most... I think people are sentimental about that performance more than the performance itself.
I think it's a very...
But it's fine.
Sweet, low-key...
It is his best work in a long
performance,
time.
Performance, yes.
No question.
Oscar Isaac in Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Alicia Vikander in Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Liev Schreiber in Spotlight.
Yes.
Kate Winslet in Steve Jobs.
Totally.
Tom Hardy in The Revenant.
Yeah.
Daisy Ridley in Star Wars.
Sure.
Jeff Daniels in Steve Jobs.
Okay, yeah.
Jada Pinkett Smith in Magic Mike XXL. You know what? Yes.
It's a dumb role, but she's good in it.
She just gyrates through that whole thing, and she's not even on stage dancing.
No. No, she's, yeah.
100% knife, Mint.
Sure.
Thank you.
No question. I'm down for that.
Subject line of this one is The Revenant! Exclamation point, exclamation point.
Okay.
This is from Tony. Mm-hmm. Just came back from seeing this. I can't imagine loving a movie more. It's beautiful to look at. The performances are extraordinary. I was just a little heartbroken that you didn't love this more. It was a spellbinding film at almost every level. I took my husband and my son, and we talked about it for more than an hour after the movie ended. It never felt long to me. I was spellbound. Am I missing something? No, we are.
Probably, yeah. Everybody has their own sort of butt indicator for, like, you know, whether or not a movie is sweeping them away or feels like it's weighing down on them, and I felt weighed down. But if you went with it and it was a transformative experience, I get it, and... Good on you. I don't begrudge anyone having those. I just didn't have one for this.
Jim would like to tell us more about celery salt.
Oh, okay.
Because we talked about it.
Yes.
Celery salt is amazing on French fries.
Huh.
I didn't know that. Is also part of the standard recipe for a Bloody Mary.
Oh, that makes sense.
I've never had a Bloody Mary in my entire life.
You're not a drinking man.
And I don't like tomato juice.
Mm. It's weird. For years, I've been drinking Bloody Mary mix on airplanes.
That's disgusting.
And then I read this article that apparently, like, there's a reason that your body actually wants a Bloody Mary mix on an airplane.
Why?
I don't remember now what it was, but there's something about the altitude or whatever.
Weird.
And so, yeah, because it's not like I ever buy it or consume it anywhere else. Somehow on an airplane, I'm like, Bloody Mary mix. That sounds great. And it turns out that there's something going on physiologically that makes me want it.
He continues, but I am old. And I still use an answering machine. P.S. I am not a member of the Celery Salt Advisory Board.
Yes, but do you sit in your living room and listen to your answering machine take calls like they do in movies? That's the question.
This is from Jerry.
Uh-huh.
Subject line, celery salt. Hi, guys. Celery salt does indeed exist and is in regular use in Chicago, since it is one of the requisite toppings on a Chicago hot dog, which also includes mustard, sliced tomatoes, a dill pickle spear, garishly green, sweet relish, and sport peppers. Yum. Just FYI.
What's a sport pepper?
A pepper that plays sports.
Oh, of course.
Hey, Noah.
I think Jerry had a P.S., that there was also raw onion on that, on the Chicago dog.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, that's in the next email.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Noah says, I was forced to do something more productive in chemistry class rather than listening to Anita Baker songs. She's great. Anita Baker.
Yeah, no, she's fine.
No one talks about her anymore, but she's terrific.
I don't know what she has to do with chemistry.
But I continue to listen to Anita Baker because turning off Anita Baker is something that you just do not do.
That's right.
While I was listening to Anita Baker, I did copy and paste. You know what, son? You need to be paying attention in chemistry class. I did copy and paste my top 10 worst of 2015 list to this email and sent it to y'all. Here's worst movies. Now, there are long explanations after each title, but I don't have time to read all of these explanations because there's a lot of explanation.
Also, Noah...
I'm going to send you the titles, Noah. I'm going to give you the titles, Noah.
Noah also asked what episode we talked about Room on. And
we didn't.
There isn't one. I got to it very late. Dave hasn't
seen it
at all.
Yet.
And spoiler, I was kind of eh. Anyway, go on.
50 Shades of Grey. He said, I should have been horny after leaving this. I wasn't. You should have been horny after leaving that. You're a teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anita Baker should make you horny.
Yeah. Bridge of Spies. Boring, he says. By the Sea. He said it was a showdown between this and Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 for worst of the total worst of the year.
Chappie. This is alphabetical. Okay.
Chappie. Fantastic Four. Mordecai.
Yeah.
Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. Pixels. Seventh Son. He says, holy crap, this is so bad. You know what? It is, but I'm kind of into Seventh
Son. I did not see it.
Taken 3.
Blah. Which I think Whitney picked that as his... Whitney or Bibbs picked that as the worst film of the year.
I'm going to go listen to more Anita Baker. Goodbye. Love you, Dave. Alonzo.
That reminds me of a professor in college. Who,
Alonzo.
There was a friend of ours named Jet, J-E-T-T.
Yes.
And somehow, some way, he had made this annoyed this professor. So he would see, if we were in a group together, he'd like, hello, so-and-so, hello, so-and-so, Jet.
It always reminds me of that moment when you asked a question, the Television Critics Association roundups, of your pal, Kim Dickens, who was the star of Fear the Walking Dead.
Yes, but this is for something else.
And it was a long time ago.
Treme
something
or
else,
something.
Treme, something like that. And she answers the question very sort of straightforwardly, and at the end of her answer, she says, blah, 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 answer, Alonzo.
Bless her heart.
This is from someone who calls himself Sir Arcane.
Well, okay.
Dear David Alonzo, I found you guys via the Sewers of Paris podcast.
Oh, yay.
And I've been a loyal listener ever since. Recently finished listening to your worst of 2015 episode. I want to make a ringtone out of Dave's initial reaction to The Revenant. The dynamic between the two of you is amazing.
Well,
that's true. The little glimpses I get of your lives, I find entertaining, makes the podcast much more fun than if you stuck rigidly to movie and TV reviews. We do TV reviews on our other new podcast, LKTV. Y'all ought to be listening to it.
You should.
1 hour a week is not enough. I will gladly plunk down the coin when LKTV goes subscription.
Well, yay, thank you.
Finally, thank you for making me aware of the Apple. I'm soon going to inflict it on my friends in a double feature with the Phantom of the Paradise.
Woo! That's a lot.
Brent, a.k.a. Sir Arcane, of something... Oh, he has his own podcast.
Oh.
And it's called A Hairy Prone Companion.
Oh, I see what you did there.
He says, warning, it's filthy.
Oh, well.
Well, that you're the opposite of this podcast, right. And I'll be looking up your podcast to decide.
We run a clean show, Sir Arcane, but, you know, you do you.
This is from Jake. Hello, Alonzo and Dave. I am an aspiring film critic. Do something else with your life.
Stop now. Let it be a hobby.
And I've been listening to your show for ages now. In fact, listening to you two bicker about movies for 3 years helped inspire me to write about movies. I started my own website, which I will not plug. I am not that shameless. Wow. And I've been doing reviews for about a year now. Now, that's good. Start your own thing.
Yes.
Don't go looking for work.
Be your own boss.
From somebody else, be your own boss. Seriously, you're not going to make any money, but you're going to be much happier.
Because guess what? If somebody else is your boss, you're still not going to make any money.
The rap pays you.
They do.
A living wage. And that's nice of them.
Yes. That's nice of them. Yeah.
So far, I've gotten positive feedback from my friends and family, and I plan on pursuing this further. I'm going to be finishing up film school next semester. I'm not sure which step I should take next. I guess what I'm asking is, how should I go about getting started with my film critic career? Should I continue to write for my website or pass my resume around some local newspapers? Any help would be appreciated. You know what? Yes, go hunt. Go out and hunt. Go look for a gig. Go look for someone to pay you.
Sure.
Just don't be surprised if those jobs don't exist.
Or they don't last.
Or they don't last. And that's the fact.
Yeah, I mean, being a self-starter is a good start. It's a good way to go. Obviously, writing for other people expands your reach and builds your brand, such as it is. But I think, look, when I started in this field, my first job was at a newspaper. And newspapers are mostly now gone the way of the dinosaur. So I think, you know, make sure that you know how to design that site and update that site and, you know, search engine optimize that site and sell ads on that site and create ads for that site. If you can be an entrepreneur, you're ahead of the game because it's a very small field. You know, it's a shrinking field. The
right.
number of people who are working film critics gets smaller all the time. But a lot of the people who come up in the ranks are ones who, like you, started with their own site,
yep.
did their own writing,
yep.
didn't have a boss,
yep.
and just accumulated a body of work and a readership. And
yep.
then somebody said, hey, I want you because of those two things. Come write for me.
Bring me Honey Daniels.
Exactly. Make yourself Honey Daniels, and then people will want you brought to them.
I said I wanted Honey Daniels.
So, yeah, you're already off on the right track. Keep doing what you're doing.
P.S. I guess while I'm here, I might as well give you my top 10 list. 10. 10, countdown to 1.
Okay.
Synecdoche, New York.
Yay!
There Will Be Blood.
Yes.
Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm.
RoboCop.
Yes.
2001.
Sure.
Citizen Kane.
Of course.
Kurosawa's High and Low.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 400 Blows.
Yeah.
Persona.
Yeah.
Number 1, Forrest Gump. Just kidding, it's Brazil.
You are 100% knife.
You are 100% knife. Jake. You know, you should tell us what your site is. We'll say it out loud.
Sure.
Well, say the name of your site.
We just said a hairy prone companion.
A hairy prone. Listen, if a hairy prone companion podcast can be mentioned out loud, the name of
your review site.
Website can be mentioned out loud too. This is from Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, David Alonzo. I came to your podcast after your appearance on the Stephanie Miller Happy Hour.
Yay.
Where I promptly fell in love with you guys.
Oh.
On a movie nerd level, of course.
Oh, okay.
What, you can't love us for our bodies, too? What's up?
We have good bodies.
Something wrong?
For radio.
Look, I've got a good body.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Period.
You're the masked saint.
Yeah. It's a big, round body. I wanted to write you guys for weeks, but I couldn't because my laptop crashed. Fortunately, my wonderful husband of 14 years bought me a new laptop for Christmas.
Yay.
Now you probably won't be able to get rid of me, so please direct your angry emails to him. 2015 is a year of seeing many bad movies because most of the good movies aren't out in theaters here. I don't know where you live. Here, with that said, here are my five worst. Fantastic Four.
Mm.
Entourage.
Mm.
Get Hard.
Mm.
The Ridiculous Six.
Mm-hmm.
Aloha.
Mm-hmm.
You're 100% knife of hate.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan. Looking forward to the subscriptions.
Great.
Happy New Year. Oh, he's from Sacramento. Thank you.
Okay.
Tony in Sacramento.
So the good stuff of 2015 will be coming your way in the next 6 to 8 weeks.
This is from Robbie.
Or at least of the end of the year. Okay.
Regular listener Robbie.
Yes.
What's up, movie grandpas?
I'll take it.
Listen, I know how old Robbie is, and we're old enough to be his dads.
Yes.
Not his grandpas.
So let's just be clear about
let's
that.
Let's be, yeah. On the conversation on The Big Short, I too can't really get over some of the same problems Dave has. I can't believe that 2 years ago, the critical community was seriously having a discussion on whether or not The Wolf of Wall Street celebrated Jordan Belfort and his cohorts. But when The Big Short rolls around, most critics ignore that it ultimately makes elaborate excuses to paint these opportunists as sympathetic. Yes, the stockbrokers and big bankers slinging the subprime mortgages in the first place are the worst guys here, but it doesn't change the fact that Bale, Carell, and Gosling's characters profited handsomely off of the pain and suffering of innocent people. The Big Short wants to distract from that to make it seem like a small victory of sorts, that even though what they're doing is repugnant, no matter which way you slice it, we're supposed to be okay with it because the money they took was from the banks. Sorry, I don't understand how two wrongs are supposed to make it right, and frankly, I think the rightful hate people have for the banks makes it easier for them to do the mental gymnastics required to root for these jerks for no reason other than that they're trying to take money from the bigger jerks. As far as I'm concerned, Bale is the only character that consistently made attempts to be a whistleblower, and only once does Brad Pitt question the moral implications of what they want to do. But it says a lot to the film that this is only brought up once and never mentioned again, as Pitt just turns around and helps the jerks make their jerk money anyway. And as a film, Anchorman and Talladega Nights and Step Brothers are frankly way less boring. I appreciated this film for its information, and that's about it. Thanks for reading this letter. I will check back in with a top 10 list in a few weeks. Thank y'all.
Well, I agree, I think, with the other letter in that the system itself is fundamentally, you know, problematic.
Mm-hmm. How much time do we have going on? What do we got?
We're at 80.
All right. I'm going to find, like, one more here.
Okay.
Here's a Star Wars letter.
No.
And it's the first one and the only one I will read on this episode. Hi, Alonzo with a Z and Dave. It's Alonzo with an S, not Liza with a Z. Just wanted to thank you guys and your fabulous guests for a wonderful Star Wars very special episode. All right, you're forgiven for the Z because you just thanked us nicely. I listened to it the day after I saw the movie the first time. I just saw it for the third time last night. I have a couple of points I would love to hear your opinions about. Well, first of all, before I even read them, I probably don't have an opinion.
Yeah, we've only
let's just ask.
We've still only seen the film once, so.
Number one, Harriet Walter as Dr. Colonia treating Chewbacca. I've loved her since the late 80s when she played Harriet Vane in the BBC-produced Dorothy Sayers mystery series. I don't know who this person is, but I can't tell if she's giving more shade as Dr. Colonia when she says, "You were very brave," or as Fanny Dashwood saying, "They're all exceedingly spoilt, I find." I'm sorry, I do not have an opinion on this, because I do not know who this actress is.
I'm guessing she was in the BBC Pride and Prejudice?
Our friend from England sitting on the couch is looking at me like, I don't know who she is either.
Okay, well, sorry, move on.
Number two, the Brazil-like engine room of the Abrams Enterprise versus the sleek lines of all the machinery in The Force Awakens. About a month ago, I rewatched the two new Star Trek movies and found myself exceedingly annoyed by the ridiculous setting used for the engine room of the Enterprise. And now, seeing the new Star Wars, I'm even more annoyed by it. If the Millennium Falcon, which is a junk heap, as everyone has been saying, for nigh on 38 years, can keep its pipes and valves and circuits behind metal grates and panels, surely so can the Enterprise.
Are your ducts attractive?
In any event, thank you for all that you both do week after week. I basically live on Turner Classic Movies. So you guys are my pipeline to modern movies and have sent me to the movie theater in the past year more times than I've been in the last five.
Wow.
And thank you for that. Happy New Year, Frank. Last name. I will withhold his last name.
Thank you, Frank.
But it's a cool last name.
All right.
Yeah.
Are we done?
We're done.
All right. Wow. Well, as always, we thank you for listening, and we thank Blue for our lovely and great theme music. You can find out more about him at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the Rotten Tomatoes podcast with Gray and Matt. You might have seen Gray this week slinging drinks on Watch What Happens Live.
Yes.
She was working the bar while Andy talked to Samuel L. Jackson and Jennifer Jason Leigh. Probably talked more about a single white female than Ms. Leigh felt like was comfortable with, but whatever. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know, the Joel Ryan thing, the Sewers of Paris, the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, I Do Movies Badly, Fat Guys at the Movies, the Criterion cast, Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, and do leave us a review. It does help people find the show. You can also stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on the handy app on our Facebook page, which you should totally go like. Join our Linoleum Knife group page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at LinoleumCast. Purchase our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes. We're currently working on Die Hard, and we'll have that up in the next couple of weeks. But in the meantime, there are 10 other ones you can dig up. Two of them are Christmas episodes, but whatever. if you have not yet listened to our commentaries for Clue or Josie and the Pussycats or Two for the Road or Gentlemen Prefer Blondes or The Poseidon Adventure or all the other ones, check those out. They're $1.99 each. You can PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com for those and let us know where to send them. And of course, you can also just drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments about the show, your top 10 and bottom 10 lists for the year just passed, or in general, or whatever else. We always enjoy hearing from you. And we will be back next week with our long-promised Best of 2017 show. Our Best of 2015 show with some very special guests who you will enjoy very much, we promise. And it will be worth the wait. So until next time.
Goodbye.